The reading is from Ecclesiastes 4, verse 1, to Ecclesiastes 5, verse 2. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who were already dead more fortunate than the living who were still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not yet seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from a man's envy of his neighbour. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, "For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?" This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. There was no end of all the people, all of whom he led. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after wind. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few.
Happy New Year, guys. It's really good to have you with us today. Did you hear the one about the two blokes having a conversation in the pub? One of them's alive, the other one is dead. And they're talking about which of the two of them is better off. "Oh, surely it's better to be me," says the alive bloke. "I mean, I'm alive. It's better to be actually alive." "No, no," says the dead guy. "The world is so full of evil and oppression. I'm finished with all of that. I'm better off than you." Good argument. Alive bloke just about to concede. When into the pub bursts a third person. She hasn't been born yet. And she says, "You're both wrong. I've had no experience of the horrors of your world. I'm better off than both of you." The end. Sorry if you were expecting a funnier punchline. But that's basically Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. Better than both is he who has not yet been. If you heard last week's talk and you've come back for more, you're a glutton for punishment. I'm not talking about my preaching generally. I'm talking about Mr. Preacher in particular and his ability to rain on any hint of New Year optimism you may be feeling. But we mustn't caricature Ecclesiastes as simply the ancient equivalent of depressing pop lyrics. It's true, Mr. Preacher is happy to explore the dark world of existential angst, but he's a believer as well. It's not all meaningless. And I picked this passage for us today because I think it might be the one he would pick if he was going to give us a New Year message. People have talked over the past 9 or 10 months about a renewed sense of what's important in life since COVID. Well, Mr. Preacher takes some things that I think are some of the lessons we've been learning about that this year, and he turns them into resolutions for life. Because see, even in this life under the sun, even in among the vanity, some ways of life are better than others, genuinely better. Mr. Preacher mainly talks about work and money, and verse 4 here describes the basic reason most people get out of bed on a Monday morning. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. We prefer to call it middle class aspiration, but the textbooks would testify that the desire to keep up with the Joneses who live next door is a basic economic motivator, which is vanity, surprise, surprise. But there's something worse in the world than the envy that makes you chase your neighbor. It's the hand-folding laziness of verse 5, which only leads to a downward spiral. But there's a better way than both. Verse 6, this is his first tip. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. It's a really good way of putting it. It's a better way to grab life with one hand rather than with two hands grab all the work and everything that you could try to get out of life but leave yourself totally stressed to the hilt. So, better, we might say, to be a deputy with some responsibility than be in charge with all the extra anxiety of that. Or in the world of football, Jamie Vardy. Better to have one handful of a quieter life at Leicester City rather than grab with both hands the big move to Liverpool or Man United and be totally stressed. You might say, grab a handful of work or London life and enjoy it. Again, rather than grabbing everything and leaving yourself weary with your anxious toil. Don't underestimate the value of a quieter life is the thing, and it is a lesson that some of us have been learning in our lockdown lives. Tip 2 comes from verse 8. See, there was this person who worked so hard, they never even got round to asking the question, who am I doing it all for? And I'm afraid you meet lots of people like that in a city like London. End of verse 8 says, that's an unhappy business. In other words, how sad were they? There's a phrase that's apparently from Sweden that goes, the best place to find a helping hand is at the end of your own arm. Now, I find it very ironic that the inventors of flat pack furniture think it's possible to put up any IKEA product on your own, but you get the point. Help yourself. Verse 9 offers better and says it doesn't have to be that way. Chapter 4, verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who's alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Two are better than one. It's a line that's often quoted at weddings, but actually the examples here are more general. They're from family life, so sons and brothers in verse 8. And the word fellow in verse 10 is a way of saying friend or partner, business partner. So this is not just about marriage. It's a basic principle for all of life. Don't go it alone. Tom and Jerry. Ben and Jerry. You wouldn't have heard of one of them if it wasn't for the other. Tip 2 for London life then is make time for others. All kinds of significant others in your life. Because you'll be helped and supported and protected in ways that you wouldn't be if you went it alone. Again, if you learnt that lesson last year, don't forget it in this new one. Do you see why I say it's not all depressing in Ecclesiastes? We're making some real progress here. Great wisdom in the detail on how to have a better life. Tip 3 is verse 13. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. They say to be old and wise, you first have to be young and foolish. To be as wise as Yoda, 900 years old, first must you be. Not so. Meet a young person who bucked the trend. Knew what he didn't know, unlike the old king, took advice. And it's a wonderful rags to riches story. We love people with a story like this, don't we? In verse 14, he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he'd been poor. Verse 16, there was no end of all the people, all of whom he led. This is a celebration of honest achievement. Our tip 1 wasn't saying don't be ambitious in your life. Just know how much you don't know and how much help you need. 3 great resolutions, I think, for 2021. Don't grab too much. Prioritize relationships and realize you need others' wisdom. Take those tips really seriously. And it leaves us maybe thinking at this stage, well, life is not so bad after that very depressing introduction about it being better never to be born. We've come quite a long way up the curve in the rest of this chapter. But just as I was getting genuinely excited about this young guy's rags to riches story, verse 16 punctures the bubble. There was no end of all the people, all of whom he led, yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after wind. See, it's a genuinely better life with 3 tips preacher has offered us, but in and of themselves, it ends up being a tease in the end. Maybe even more tragic, because the better life didn't last or get remembered either. Our wise youth at the end of chapter 4 is not just death, it's this sense of being unremembered, unrejoiced in, whether you want to call it a sense of legacy, a desire that our work would have real value, the lasts. Actually, it would all be forgotten under the sun. And the journey back down the curve, if you want to read on, it continues with a vengeance in chapters 5 and 6. There's a man in chapter 5 who does have a son, so 2 are better than 1, but his money doesn't last, and so he's not actually able to pass anything on to the one he was in relationship with. In 5 verse 18, we're told to enjoy our lot, but then told that that enjoyment is a gift from God. What if God decides not to give it to me? By the end of chapter 6, the preacher is asking the same old existential questions. See, that renewed sense of what's important in life that you may have developed in the past year and Mr. Preacher's tips for wisdom, in the end, on their own, leave us frustrated still. Are we any further on? Remember, Mr. Preacher's aim is to drive us to our Maker. And this is our second point. Fear God is the thing. Chapter 3 told us that we are fleeting. He endures forever. In 5 verse 2, we are on earth. He is in heaven. And that's why 5 verse 1 makes such logical sense as the application of where we are so far. Guard your steps when you go to the house of the Lord. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they don't know that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. This is the most pushy that Mr. Preacher has been so far in the book. So far, it's been observational and wisdom that would be good for you. This is really directional. This is the thing you need to do, he says. If you want answers, there's only one place to go. And it's not going to God's house mainly to spout off at him, rather to draw near to listen. The house of God was the place where you went to do that. Back in the day, God's scriptures opened and read. And isn't that brilliant that in among all of the fog and the frustration, God is not hiding behind a big sofa in the far corner of the universe? No, he comes amongst us to shed light. That's why he dwelled with his people after the Exodus, that they would know him. That's why John 1 says that in Jesus, he has come to dwell among us. No one has ever seen God. God, the one and only, has made him known. And there's no reason that he should do that. See, we deserve to be left in the dark. And here then is another better than from Mr. Preacher, turning up to the house of God to make sacrifices or promises is not better than drawing near to listen. See, for us, it's not about being in a physical space like they were in the temple. The point is, he is in heaven. We are on earth. 5 verse 2, he can see the big picture. And therefore, wherever God's word is opened, we will want to draw near in listening mode. So I want to apply this basic thing to some different of us who may be listening today. First, to the person who's simply living this life under the sun. The message is that you can't discover ultimate meaning by exploration, no matter how clever or religious or philosophical you are. You're trapped within the system. Could you be humble enough to look beyond for answers? And I want to say to those of us who are Christians, we were challenged earlier about carol service follow-up, inviting people to Hope Explored or to read the Bible one-to-one. We can be a bit shy and nervous about that, can't we? Sorry for suggesting this can be our tone. But let's have a mindset shift and remember, how well are our friends doing at finding ultimate meaning anywhere else at the moment? And let's not underestimate just how precious it would be for them to receive some of these words from heaven. It's a million times better than the best of human philosophy because it comes from the person who sees it all beyond the sun. And to those of us who do believe in God, the challenge is partly, is your religion fundamentally a listening exercise? A listening to his word exercise? Or is it about something else, our vows and offerings and words? We try and organise our meetings around big chunks of the Bible, and Ecclesiastes gives us yet more reasons to try and keep doing that in 2021, whether online or in person. We live under the sun. He is in heaven. The most insightful, true, relevant words that we need will always be the words in here. We should be gasping for them. And I want to say, let's be honest, it is very difficult for us to keep being energized for Bible times at the moment. Zoom small groups can be really hard work, can't they? Church services are not what they used to be. And maybe it's just a more general malaise, bored of Bible time, or other people saying to you that you're a bit too keen in your priorities. Remember, those quiet times and those midweek groups and those sermons, they're not just, oh, the Bible, yeah, I really should. I think maybe we should pray for a fresh sense of excitement and wonder that heaven has spoken to earth. See, in amongst all of the confusion and the uncertainty and unknown that we feel on the earthly side, this is our window into things beyond. Sweet clarity, true enlightenment, gold dust in God's word rather than the dross. So let's be people who keep drawing near to listen in 2021, shall we? We won't regret it.